The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. This week, the president declares an emergency on the climate.
As president, I'll use my executive powers to combat the climate crisis in the absence of congressional action.
While his transportation secretary, Pete Buttigieg, essentially praises the benefits of high gas prices.
The more pain we are all experiencing from the high price of gas, the more benefit there is for those who can access electric vehicles.
We will hear from Stephen Moore.
Seems like a very nice man, but he knows nothing about what he's talking about.
The prospect of an emergency use of executive powers, well, that's a genuine threat.
So what will they do? All these emergencies? They all do the same thing. They control more of life in America.
We'll look at the hero, Elijah Dicken, who saved, quote, countless lives in the Indiana Mall shooting on Sunday.
Even Hollywood wouldn't script a 22-year-old with his girlfriend neutralizing a guy with an AR in 15 seconds.
In the lesson we ought to be learning about concealed carry.
To me, it's media malpractice. They refuse to keep saying that we've had yet another mass public shooting in a place where guns were banned.
All this and more. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Great to be with you. Catch my program each weekday morning live, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Eastern Time and on demand 24/7. Learn more at HughHewitt.com. And follow me on Twitter, please, at Hugh Hewitt. And follow this program as well at Town Hall Review. We'll begin with two issues that are very closely related. The climate, on the climate policy of this administration, and the economy. On Wednesday, the president made it very clear that he's willing to use his executive power to address our climate, quote, emergency.
As president, I'll use my executive powers to combat the climate crisis in the absence of congressional action.
Pete Buttigieg, our transportation secretary, was speaking before the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee when he made a statement that raised eyebrows. He's interacting here with Representative Carlos Jimenez, a Republican from Florida.
The more pain we are all experiencing from the high price of gas, the more benefit there is for those who can access electric vehicles.
Given the rise in electricity rates and the rolling power outages we've seen in the summer months in recent years, Thomas Massie, the Republican representative from Kentucky, pressed the secretary on the real power consumption of electric vehicles.
The average household uses 17% of their electricity for air conditioning. It would take four times as much electricity to charge the average household's cars as the average household uses on air conditioning.
Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson from Chicago's AM 560 The Answer turn to veteran economist Stephen Moore.
And Pete Buttigieg is kind of exhibit A. He seems like a very nice man, but he knows nothing about what he's talking about. He has no knowledge about how the economy works, and it's emblematic of what's happening in this administration, where you put kind of ideologues in these positions, but they don't really know much about what they're talking about because they've never actually been involved in business and finance. Look, my attitude about these electric vehicles is very simple. I believe, you heard it first on the Dan and Amy show, that it will be very soon that they will outlaw. They're going to outlaw cars that are not electric vehicles.
Oh,
you know, they're not. You can't use a gasoline-powered car any longer because they're so virtuous, and we have to clean up the economy and the environment, and therefore everybody's going to have to buy an EV. Now, by the way, I have nothing against electric vehicles. I mean, I've driven Teslas; they're pretty neat cars. But one thing is really for sure is that Americans don't want the government telling them what kind of car they can drive.
Right.
And I guarantee you that's where they're headed because they're authoritarians and they know best. And one other quick thing, Massey is one of the smartest guys, by the way, the congressman.
MIT, yeah.
MIT, he's a genius. And he knows way more about energy I guarantee you that Pete Buttigieg did. And he just, he really skewered Buttigieg because it's not clear that you're doing any good for the environment by forcing people to buy electric vehicles. Because what are you going to do, put windmills on the top of these cars?
I know.
These leftists have this idea that somehow the electric power is free. Well, it isn't. You know, you're going to have to go get the electric car.
Right.
You're either going to get it from coal or for natural gas or I don't know. I just don't even understand quite the logic of it.
Well, natural gas is up 48%, so I don't think that's an option. But what about, you know, our army fleet? What about the vehicles, you know, the Hummers and all the, you know, the vast majority of our equipment that we use in the army? What about that? What about farm equipment? And then eventually, are they going to try to use electric engines for airplanes?
You're right. I mean, it's really absurd, isn't it? And trucks. You know, electric trucks, I'm not so sure that's going to work so very well. And incidentally, for people living in cold states like you do there in the Chicago area, the evidence is now pretty clear that the batteries, you know, wear out much faster than they do in warmer areas. So that's going to be a problem. What happens on those frigid days when it's 20 degrees below zero and your battery doesn't start? So there's all sorts of problems with this, but the bottom line is we have got to start producing more American energy. This is such a no-brainer that we can be energy independent again as we were under Trump. We have more coal, more oil, more gas than any other country. By the way, do you guys know what form of energy Germany is moving towards now?
Coal.
Yeah. Coal.
My friend and colleague Dennis Prager is concerned.
This is a very scary headline, and I don't get scared much. Washington Post spokesperson for the left. Biden could declare climate emergency as soon as this week. A major reason, if not the major reason, for the price of energy, that is to fill up your car, etc., is because Joe Biden and the crackpots of the environmentalist movement, rich, white, bored, secular people. That is who comprise the environmentalist movement. It's funny that I'm saying white because it usually doesn't matter, but in this case, it's overwhelmingly. And they're overwhelmingly wealthy like Tom Steyer and the others. And they're bored. They have no meaning in their lives, so they must invent a meaning, saving the planet from global warming. You can't get more meaning than that. I'm saving the planet. At the expense of people's ability to eat around the world because they have no energy, at the expense of vast numbers of people in the third world dying because of the pollution from indoor heating and cooking, but they don't care about these people. The environmentalist movement is sick. It is sick, and it's a lie because it refuses to endorse nuclear power. France gets 60% of its electricity from nuclear power. We're going to fly airplanes on wind power, on electric batteries. You know how electric batteries are made? See our video on electric batteries, on electric cars. See how lithium is used, what it does, where it's mined, and then tell me that the electric car is really, really environmentally wonderful, a gift, a new emergency. We just had an emergency of lockdown. That's what they live for, these people on the left. To lock you down, to control you. The fact that you are free, that you will ride in a car on your own and live where you wish to live in a house as big as you want. This bothers people on the left. The smaller your house, the happier they are. The less you drive, the happier they are. Get into a train, you sheep. The car is the symbol of independence, loathed by the left, which is always, always totalitarian. A state of climate emergency. So what will they do? All these emergencies? They all do the same thing. They control more of life in America. White House officials are scrambling to advance the president's environmental agenda after talks with Senator Joe Manchin III stalled. President Biden is considering declaring a national climate emergency as soon as this week, according to three people familiar with the matter. The potential move comes days after Senator Joe Manchin told Democratic leaders he does not support his party's efforts to advance a sprawling economic package that includes billions of dollars to address global warming. More billions to be printed and make your dollar worthless. Those of you who are retired and vote Democrat, you're stupid. Sorry, you may be nice, kind, generous, loyal, every wonderful thing, but you're stupid for voting for the party that is ruining your savings. Your life savings is becoming monopoly money, thanks to the Democratic Party, the arm of the left. And it will be more. There's always a reason. And this is the big one. This is all an excuse to control your life. The whole environmentalist movement has become an excuse to control your life. If the emergency is invoked, it can empower the Biden administration in its efforts to reduce carbon emissions. What does that mean? What does that mean? The government will control more of my life? It will tell me how many miles I could drive? Every single environmentalist who is on the green edge of the environmentalist movement would like to monitor how many miles you drive. In anticipation of a potential announcement, Biden is set to travel to Somerset, Massachusetts, to deliver a speech on climate change on Wednesday. The president intends to speak on, quote, tackling the climate crisis and seizing the opportunity of a clean energy future to create jobs. God, do they lie. And lower costs for families. Oh, my God. It will lower costs. Tell me a country where people have lower costs because of going to wind and solar. Tell me one country. Name me a country where this gigantic lie of Biden and every single spokesman for him, like the New York Times and Washington Post, and of course what your kids get in school, it's a gigantic lie. We will lower costs. Lower costs. The lowest cost is gasoline from fossil fuel. That's a fact. This is a very scary thing. State of emergency. This is a new thing. States of emergencies to control our lives.
Coming up, a hero saves lives in the latest mass shooting.
Even Hollywood wouldn't script a 22-year-old with his girlfriend neutralizing a guy with an AR in 15 seconds.
When the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment.
As the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy enters our 25th anniversary year, we've remained committed to a single truth of world history, that ideas have consequences. To understand these ideas and their impact on today's politics, and to test them quantitatively, requires the unique curriculum we offer on our Malibu, California campus. Apply now for fall classes at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Greenwood, Indiana was the site of the latest in a series of mass shootings we've seen in recent months. It was about 6 p.m. on Sunday evening last week when a young man entered the mall with an AR-15, a Luger, and an intent to kill as many people as he could. Three lives were tragically lost, but it could have been much, much worse. The assailant was shot within 15 seconds of opening fire. I turn to Leland Bittard of News Nation Now.
And the Indiana Mall hero, Elijah Dicken, is in the news. I want to know what your network and what you did with this story, because News Nation Now is a straight-up newscast. It's just the news. And this is a big story that's not really been covered. What did you do with the Indiana Mall shooting?
We thought it was really an incredible story. First of all, his heroics, we've now learned, were something out of a movie. Even Hollywood wouldn't script a 22-year-old with his girlfriend neutralizing a guy with an AR in 15 seconds. It's sort of remarkable just on its face. But more importantly, in a time when there is so much debate over active shooters and so much debate over how to stop them, undoubtedly stopping them is a good thing, so much debate over weapons in America, whether people should be able to carry them or not and where they should carry them. The fact that somebody in a constitutional carry state neutralized an active shooter is real news.
But when you said more importantly, and you said real news, that took 30 seconds. So it, I just by way of contrast, that just took, it was a perfectly right. concise answer. By way of contrast, Eli Dickin had shot him to death twice in that time because it's 15 seconds, now, half that time.
Now you make me feel inadequate, you.
No, I mean, I just am amazed by this story, the training, the it's the way constitutional carry is supposed to operate in a sitting like that. You assume that well-trained citizens and responsible citizens carry weapons. And when they see a bad guy, and this guy could have killed dozens of people. Eli Dickin is 22 years old. He stands up and he, I gather shooting people are pretty impressed with his aim as well. How did you cover the story?
Well, we led with it two nights ago, which was Monday night.
Yep.
My days are bleeding together here. Monday night, we led with it. We had on Tony Katz, who's an Indianapolis radio host. I think we also pointed out that a number of the other networks weren't covering it. And we don't do media criticism as a rule because journalists make lousy media critics. But the fact that, for example, the press conference where the police came out and talked about Dickin and his heroics and him stopping the active shooter and what happened, CNN didn't even cover. They didn't take it. And you have to think, and we've said this before, that the reason they didn't cover it is because it's not politically convenient.
Yeah, America would like to know more about this young man. They would like to know more about the demented killer. And I think they would like to know what are the similarities between, we've had four of these depraved, broken people in 2 months in Buffalo and Uvalde, now in Greenwood, and the fourth one is in Highland Park. Four people, all 18 to 22, all broken.
No question. And that is the part of the story that is not getting covered. And I think as a general rule, we try to cover stories which are inconvenient to both sides, whose narratives challenge the establishment media of both political persuasions.
There are some fairly straightforward lessons to be learned here. You're not hearing them from the elite media outlets. Brandon Tatum, my new colleague and a former police officer himself, turned to John Lott of the Crime Prevention Research Center.
Can you speak to us a little bit about the research that you've done at the Crime Prevention Research Center?
Look, I mean, there's so much evidence out there. One just has to read the diaries or the manifestos that these murderers leave. I mean, the Buffalo murderer, for example, he explicitly talks about why he picked the target that he did. He wanted to go to a place where he knew his victims would not have permitted concealed handguns because he was worried that they would make it difficult for him to go and kill people. These killers, time after time, their goal is simply to get media attention. I'm not going to go and argue we ought to get rid of the First Amendment, okay? But the thing is, they know the more people they kill, the more news stories they're going to be done on them from around the world. Their goal is to try to kill as many people as possible. And they may be crazy, but they're not stupid. They want to go to a place where they know victims can't defend themselves because they know they're going to be able to go and kill more people. And, you know, at some point, when you read the diaries and manifestos and you read that over and over again, they'll say things, if I can only kill more people than such and such did, I can get even more media attention. And, you know, you also look at the fact that about 96% of these mass public shooters, the successful ones, go to places where victims weren't able to go and defend themselves. You know, so, you know, it's not by accident that these things happen. And look, I tell people to obey the law. If it's posted signs, even if I disagree with the place, I advise people that they should obey the rules. You know, I have to agree with you on this, though. I'm glad that this individual carried his concealed handgun there where, it was posted and was banned from doing it. Too many of these movie theaters. You know, you'll go and you see the movie theater shootings in places like Omaha, Nebraska, or Kansas City, or Salt Lake City, or Portland that have happened. You know, in Nebraska, in Omaha, Nebraska, you have 8 enclosed malls. Only one of them allowed people to be able to carry or posted signs banning permitted concealed handguns. Where do you think he went? He went to the one all the way across town that posted signs banning permanent concealed handguns. You see the same things in these other ones. You see it in movie theaters. You look at the Aurora Batman movie theater shooter case. There were 7 movie theaters showing the premiere of that Batman movie within a 20-minute drive of the murderer's apartment. Only one of them posted signs banning permanent concealed handguns. It wasn't the one that was closest to his home. It wasn't the one with the largest theaters. But he went to the one that posted. We know that he cased these places. We know from reading his diaries that he was thinking about other targets, but he was concerned that at the other targets, somebody there with a gun might have been able to stop him. So, you know, to me, it's media malpractice that the media keeps on refusing to report basic facts. They refuse to report the diaries where these individuals say why they picked the target that they did. They refuse to keep saying that we've had yet another mass public shooting in a place where guns were banned. The other thing that they refuse to do usually, though this case is unusual, is that they don't give coverage to those cases that are stopped by people with permanent concealed handguns. At our website, we have like 64 cases in just the last years where people with permanent concealed handguns have stopped what otherwise would have been mass public shootings. You will very rarely see any media coverage on these cases. And my guess is the entire gun control debate would be different if just a few of those things were covered the way they should be.
Coming up, AOC gets arrested.
What gets people more riled than anything else I talk about is the two-tier justice system we have.
When the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment. Stay with us.
Hi, it's Mike Gallagher. I start every day by reading through the stories at Daybreak Insider. It's a look at today's most compelling stories and provides responses from key conservatives in media and politics. Over 250,000 people get Daybreak Insider by email daily, and it's available to you at no cost. Go to daybreakinsider.com and simply plug in your email. That's daybreakinsider.com. In 5 minutes, you will be the most informed person in the office. That's daybreakinsider.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. You may have seen the footage. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez got arrested this week. She was in front of the Supreme Court protesting the Dobbs decision, which set a new precedent on abortion. The acting was very complete, right up to and including feigning that she was arrested. Her hands held behind her back as though she had been handcuffed. She wasn't. She was joined by a number of her hard-left colleagues, including Rashida Tlaib of Michigan, Ilhan Omar of Minnesota, and Cori Bush of Missouri. It was a media moment, which they celebrated on Twitter in the immediate aftermath. In one sense, it was much ado about nothing, but it reveals something that really does matter. Andrew McCarthy, the former federal prosecutor, joined my colleague in New York City, Joe Piscopo. From AM 970, The Answer.
How do they get away with it? And it was like an insult to people who really have legitimate protests, what AOC and the Democrats did down at that abortion rights protest. But did they, let me start here, did AOC get arrested indeed?
Well, I mean, probably as a matter of law, Joe, what an arrest is technically as a matter of constitutional law is your ability to leave has been suspended, has been cut off by the police. In other words, you can't just get up and go. Yeah. It's not a question of whether they slap cuffs on you or imaginary cuffs, as it were. the question is, like, are you free to get up and leave? And if you're not free to get up and leave, at the very least, you're detained. And if you're not, you know, if you're not able to get up and leave for a decent period of time, that's legally considered an arrest.
Does Representative Omar and AOC, do they not know how this diminishes anything that they say from here on out? It's like all an illusion. It's all like for attention. It diminishes any power that they have. And this, let's get to the heart of the matter, Andrew, if we may, that abortion is not illegal in America. They have not made abortion illegal. They're putting that narrative out. They almost got a Supreme Court justice killed, Andy. It's something we should consider more seriously, yes?
Yeah, but these are, you know, Joe, these are like Bolshevik kind of people. I mean, they even have the same beliefs. At least like, you know, Bill Ayers, the Weather Underground terrorist, used to refer to himself, I think he still does, as a small C communist. So like some people are out there who are, you know, they're radicals and they're pretty clear about being radicals. These people are, you know, from that same cut from that same cloth. And I think, you know, we think they've lost all their credibility when they do things like pretend to be, you know, really arrested. I don't even know if they were booked, Joe. I understand the Capitol Police may have just released people without actually booking them.
Right.
And, you know, they pretend that they were handcuffed when they obviously weren't, because they're figuring in the future there'll be still photos of all this and it'll look like they were arrested even if they weren't. They're not trying to appeal to everybody broadly. They're trying to appeal to a very narrow slice of the public, which enriches them greatly with the kind of fundraising that they're able to do. You know, these are there's a lot of money in socialism. You know, these people live pretty well for people who are against all that icky capitalist stuff. So, you know, I think this is a racket. You know, it's a racket.
Yeah, well said. How many homes does Bernie Sanders have? You're absolutely right. That's now. And what? But what's unsettling to those of us who believe greatly in this country, when Stephen Colbert's staff not prosecuted, AOC walks, Ilhan Omar walks, but Peter Navarro gets leg irons, and they wait for him to go to an airport to embarrass him. The deal, and even Roger Stone. It just seems they let all the people that side with, I want to say Democrats, but they're not even Democrats, because there are some great Democrats out there, Andy, and they side with the socialists. I mean, why the hypocrisy here, do you think?
Yeah, well, that's why a butt kicking's coming in November. Mm, you know, when I go around the country to talk about national security stuff and law enforcement stuff, Joe, what gets people more riled than anything else I talk about is the two-tier justice system we have. Yeah. Nobody has any problem, you know, even like very conservative people who I encounter don't have a problem with the idea of conservative people who break the law being held to account for breaking the law. What they want is a fair system. They want everybody to be treated the same. And it's demonstrable that everybody is not treated the same. I mean, those Colbert people should have been charged. There's hundreds of people in connection with the Capitol riot who didn't do anything violent, who have been charged with misdemeanors by the Justice Department for being in a place they weren't allowed to be without authorization, which is exactly what these Colbert guys did. Now, they were there without authorization. That's what they've charged these other people with, but they're letting the Colbert people go.
Coming up,
will the Supreme Court find a federal constitutional standard to apply when it's a dispute between the state Supreme Court and the state legislature?
When the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment.
The Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy believes in the calling to politics and public service. As one of the few programs of its kind based at a leading Christian university, we prepare students for exciting careers in this vital arena through a curriculum that combines rigorous study of America's founding principles with the latest tools of policy analysis. The application period for fall 2022 classes has begun, so find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. The Supreme Court term that ended last month was absolutely enormous. I have taught constitutional law for 26 years now at Chapman University's Fowler School of Law. And this past term, the court will fundamentally change the source text in the cases the students will be reading for years, perhaps decades to come. From abortion of the Second Amendment to reining in the EPA to the Establishment Clause case in Maine, I could go on and on. It was a win for originalism, a win for the Constitution. The takeaway on this, then, is, first, elections matter when it comes to our highest law. Only as a result of winning elections and confirming solid originalist judges did we get to where we are today. The second takeaway is that the Supreme Court matters. Year in and year out, I say it, and it does. I turn to Ilya Shapiro of the Manhattan Institute to talk about the cases to watch the next term. All of this stuff that we have been living through since January 6th, and indeed since 2016, is because of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court taking away the right to draw districts from the state legislator. It's a long time past, and the Supreme Court didn't want to touch it. Will they get in and finally say, and I think it would fall at the same time, no more independent commissions, no more state Supreme Courts. It's up to state legislators to draw a legislative district, which is what the framers intended, in my opinion.
Well, look, luckily I get paid to analyze and advocate rather than predict. And this one is the toughest one to, I think, predict of any of those that we've talked about. Because, for example, in the redistricting cases, the court ultimately threw up its hands and said, look, there's no constitutional standard for when the politicians take politics too much into account in partisan gerrymandering. Here, this might be similar. It might not be a good thing for state Supreme Courts to rewrite the law. But what is the federal constitutional standard? Is it the time, place and manner clause that states can establish the time, place and manner of elections? Is it voting rights, basically? But people aren't being denied their voting rights based on race or sex or other equal protection sort of things. So the key question is, will the Supreme Court find a federal constitutional standard to apply when it's a dispute between the state Supreme Court and the state legislature? I don't know.
I think honestly. It will. I think it will say the text of the Constitution and the original intent, not altered by the 14th Amendment, was to leave these decisions to state legislatures, not Supreme Courts, and within the context of what you carefully articulated, no use of race, no use of gender, equal numbers of people in every legislative district. The rest of it is, and by the way, these independent commissions have absolutely no precedent, either in 1789 or in 1868. There's no way that an independent commission is supposed to make these decisions. And there's no way, I also don't see them extrapolating to the Supreme Court, Ilya. Do you really think there are five votes to say state Supreme Courts can do whatever they want? Because some of them are nuts.
No, probably not. I mean, I think we're going to see this in oral argument is they're going to, they want to rule that way. What you're saying is eminently sensible. But what is the standard? Because ultimately, state courts do have the power to interpret state law when there's a question of how to interpret that election law. That needs to be applied and decided by the state Supreme Court. But what is the standard for when they go too far? Is it that they're denying a Republican form of government? Is it that they're usurping the legislative authority? I don't know how that I haven't yet dug into the briefs, so I don't know how that resonates. I don't think the briefs have all been filed yet, for that matter. But it's going to be a tough one to look at.
Okay, let's go to one where conservatives divide, the pork case in the Dormant Commerce Clause or the Negative Commerce Clause. You've got to explain, people, states can't interfere with the flow of commerce. That's what I start my students on. If there's a river and it's starting up in Minnesota and it's ending in New Orleans, states can't charge tolls along the way. That's like the basic story. What does the pork producer regulation do other than interfere with state commerce?
Right. But the question is the way that you boil down the jurisprudence, and it's not clear. And, ultimately, I filed a brief at the cert stage to get the Supreme Court to take this case. And I support the pork producers because I think what California is doing is really setting standards for the country. But I hope even if that position loses, as it might, because, for example, you mentioned this divides conservatives, Gorsuch and Thomas, I think, are going to rule for California here. They don't like the Dormant Commerce Clause.
Yep.
Unless it's a clear situation like that tolls of the highway or the river or whatever. But it's a very heterodox. You might see the liberal split as well, for that matter. I mean, it doesn't match up with normal ideological divisions. But I hope they clarify the standard, because currently
it's
what's called a Pike balancing test. And whenever you have a balancing test, I mean, typically whoever the swing justice just kind of throws up their their hands and says, okay, let's go this way. And it's very hard, again, hard to predict, but better a better standard would be very useful.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that standard should be do not interfere with people doing business lawfully. Now, let me move to the Rapanos decision, the 404. I actually did this for 30 years. I'm glad it was confusing as hell for 30 years. It's got to stop. People do not owe their allegiance to the United States Army Corps of Engineers. It assaults property rights. Do you think we see property rights begin to resurrect in this case?
I think so. I mean, the Sacketts previously won their right to even contest this suit. And, this is, again, this is a cleanup from last term was a cleanup of Justice O'Connor on religion. This term might be a cleanup of Justice Kennedy on interstate commerce and property rights and Clean Water Act, Clean Air Act, those sorts of things. As you said, Rapanos, you don't really want to get into the weeds, but clearly when it's just stuff that is you cannot navigate. I don't care how shallow your pontoon is. You're not going to navigate that particular water. And
it's worse than that, Ilya. Underground rivers that only run in California are regulated by the Army Corps of Engineers. It destroys the ability to use the land. And we've got to have a standard that if you take my land, you pay for it. Now, quickly on to creative. I think this is big because Justice Barrett said 2 years ago, we got to come up with a new standard. Smith doesn't work. And she's had 2 years to think about it. Are we going to get a new standard?
I don't know if we're going to need to overturn Employment Division versus Smith, because which is a case that says if you want a religious exemption, you need to get it from the legislature if it's a neutrally applicable law. But the court has been saying you're purposely targeting religious institutions. And I think they're going to find a way to say the same thing here. Not quite with the smoking gun that they had with Masterpiece Cake Shop, where the commissioners were actively bigoted in their statements. But like we saw in the two terms ago with adoption standards in Philadelphia, that they disqualified the Catholics because they wouldn't they would refer rather than give direct placements to gay couples. Here they're going to say, look, the only there's no problem here. You've manufactured this problem. There are plenty of other website designers you could go to, and you're targeting with this litigation, with this prosecution by the Civil Rights Commission.
Coming up, affirmative action.
Well, this is a place, as you said, that where John Roberts is not squishy.
A few more minutes with Ilya Shapiro in the final segment of the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt.
Hi, I'm Georgine Rice. This week in the Christian Outlook, sponsored by the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. This week, the American people languish under the weight of inflation.
The 9.1 number doesn't really capture all of the pain that's going on.
While the administration pushes an agenda that can best be described as a revolution.
It reminds us that there's a thin veneer of civilization, and if you don't invest in it, then this civilization starts to unwind.
In our post-Roe world, the pro-life community faces new challenges.
They're calling it abortion tourism.
And the never more important message of adoption.
There's less than 20,000 kids a year adopted. Back when I was adopted, in the 50s, there were hundreds of thousands.
Be sure to join us and visit our website at christianoutlook.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. We're going to end this conversation on the Supreme Court cases to watch in the next term with a big one. Okay, the biggest one in the next term. The case is called Students for Fair Admissions versus President and Fellows of Harvard College. Let's pick up on my conversation with Ilya Shapiro. The case that I think is the most important, and it is the affirmative action case involving Harvard. You say, I didn't go to Harvard. Well, it's going to be about everything. And Ilya, I want to start with my favorite John Roberts quote. And the chief and I have known each other since we worked together in the White House in 1985 and 86. And I love him. I think he's a terrific chief justice. He's not a close friend. I just think he's a great man. He wrote in 2007, the way to stop discrimination on the basis of race is to stop discriminating on the basis of race. That's from a famous case called Community School, Parents Involved in Community Schools versus Seattle School District Number 1. I think that's the key to America. I think that's everything in our future. We can go down one path where race matters or another where don't bring it up. And it's teed up in the Harvard case. What's going to happen? Are we going to get another statement from the chief like this that resonates?
Well, this is a place, as you said, that where John Roberts is not squishy. And I don't think Kavanaugh is going to be squishy based on what we've seen of him. So we could not just, you know, hand a technical win and say Harvard is a black box. We don't know how they're using race. Lower courts, go figure it out again, which is what happened and was not very good in the UT Austin Fisher case a number of years ago. I think this is ripe for a complete demolition of this this edifice based on this diversity rationale that got exactly one vote in 1979 in the Bakke case, a challenge to racial preferences at UC Davis Medical School, where there were four justices that said you can use race all the time to remedy past wrongs. Four justices who said, no, this is against the 14th Amendment. You can't do it. And one, Lewis Powell, who said, well, diversity in education is a compelling interest. And so all of this for 40 years, all of our fights have been based on that thin reed. And so I think as with Roe v. Wade and some other precedents that have been thrown out in recent years, I think this is finally where the court says there's no way to do this. We have to kick this whole rotten can away.
If the country survives 100 years, Ilya, I think we will look back at the Burger court era as a disaster that befell American jurisprudence, and that the Trump justices led by the Chief Justice and Justice Thomas and whoever else is the sixth, who I'm forgetting, there are six conservatives, let us out of the forest because we have no business being here. Are you as optimistic as I am?
I am, but I think John Roberts, the Chief Justice, is being brought there kicking and screaming in many ways. As I said, on this area, on race, he's not been squishy.
Thank you for joining us for the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Town Hall Review is part of the Salem Podcast Network. If you haven't signed up for our podcast yet, why not do so today? Go to townhallreview.com. Special thanks to executive producer Russell Schumann, producers David Bouchon, Michael Cook, Tim Gantner, Adam Ramsey, Jacob Orduña, and Dwayne Patterson. Let me say thanks once again to our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for joining us.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never before seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.